Rocky Horror Minute is rated R. The Rocky Horror Picture Show is also rated R. We're going to spend this time discussing the movie in gory detail, and along the road we will talk about some adult content and use some of our favorite swear words.
No, you can't! There must be another way!
Do you want to stop Snake from getting that stone or not?
Consider yourselves warned. Welcome to Rocky Horror Minute, the podcast where we break down the Rocky Horror Picture Show in excruciating detail, 1 minute at a time. I'm one of your hosts, Leandra.
And I'm your other host, Kelly.
And today we are joined again by a very special guest, a good friend of mine and better friend to Kelly, the webmaster of our imaginary website, Brad Monroe.
Oh, man.
Hello, hello.
Brad, before we drop in to our discussion of the minute, last minute you said I forced you into playing Riff. I don't recall any of that.
Oh, you don't?
No, not even a little bit. Can you talk about that and just your general experience on a Rocky cast?
Well, yeah, so I think at that point I had been doing tech for a little bit. So I was like kind of familiar with how the show worked outside of being an audience member, because it is a very different thing to be sitting in the theater and watching the show than to be a part of making sure things happen correctly. And the night that I started playing Riff, it was because we had a much beloved cast member call out like 15 minutes before the show. And you were like, Brad, I need a Riff. Do you want to be Riff? You should be Riff. Brad, you should be Riff. You should do it. And then I agreed, and that is the most I can tell you of that night. I'm pretty sure I blacked out for most of it. I vaguely remember doing the kicks during Time Warp, but everything else, I was, like, not there. But it was fun.
I will throw it out there that if you had said no, I would have moved down the list.
Oh, no,
but I did genuinely think.
I know. I am using forced in a endearing way.
Okay. Well, that's good. I don't remember that, but that does check out. So often I will cast somebody and they'll go, remember how I said I was definitely going to be there? That was a lie. And then I'm kind of stuck scrambling at the last minute. So people who are down to jump in are often my new best friends.
Yeah, I had to go around the cast begging for costume pieces and what we had in the prop room. I felt like a little Victorian orphan.
Kelly's type.
Yeah. Sad but true.
No, her type is like that freak from Clockwork Orange.
No!
It can be both. They're really the same person.
Yeah, that's true. Well, he's not that sickly looking.
The one time I'm so proud about roasting Kelly was we were driving somewhere, and no offense to this guy, I'm sure he's a wonderful person, but there was the most Point Dexter-est looking guy walking down the side of the road, and I was like, hey Kelly, there's a guy you'll sleep with.
It was true, because I was already looking at him being like, damn.
That's great. Kelly, you have a type, and it's people I can murder.
This is kind of a self-own, although I don't know if Leandra could murder me, except maybe with, like, by doing puppy dog eyes.
No, Brad's off script. Yeah, off model for me.
Yeah, Brad's got cake for farting on, I guess.
I am dating Kelly.
Oh, man. This is so much more fun to talk about than Minute 68.
Oh, Minute 68. Remind me again what happens in that, Kelly?
Whole lot of nothing. Here we go. So Dr. Scott continues singing, he was born. We see Frank kind of fold his fingers and feign interest. So Scott continues, he was trouble. He was the thorn, and then we see Brad and Janet look really uncomfortable, in his mutter's side. She tried in vain, and then we get a shot of Rocky gnawing away and not caring about this at all, which would be me. And then it cuts to Krim, who is looking at a recreation of a famous painting that you probably know by the wrong name. The correct name is Arrangement in Gray and Black, number 1. More about that later. I'm really annoying about it. Anyway, but this is not the actual painting. It's a photo with Meatloaf in it. More about that later, too. And then Krim says, "But he never caused her nothing but shame." And then Scott continues, "He left home the day she died." The trio at the head of the table, Riff, Magenta, and Frank, look very bored, but Magenta is kind of, like, feigning sympathy, like, sarcastically, I always felt like, while rubbing her nipple with her middle right finger. And then Scott continues, "From the day she was gone," and then the music picks up. It gets a lot faster, like more up-tempo and more fun, and then Scott really starts to boogie along with the music. He's sort of moving his shoulders to the beat and going side to side, and he continues, "All he wanted was rock and roll porn," and then we see a shot of the Krim book. And in the Krim book, there's an image of a record produced by Acme Records called Teddy Bear. And there is a porn mag called Tonight with titties out on that, which I thought was interesting because we often say that Columbia is the only boobs in this movie. But no, actually, I mean, technically, whoever's on the cover of Tonight also shows her boobs in this movie. And then Scott adds, "und a motorbike," and then it flips to, like, an Evel Knievel-style, like, motorcycle stunt pic. And then there's also, we've talked about this when Larry Vizel was on the podcast a million years ago, but there is a rare, as yet nobody has found this magazine, but it's called Rat Bike of the Month. And then there is one called Choppers, another motorcycle magazine. And then there is a flip to the next page, which shows presumably Eddie's fingerprints. And there is an amazing photo of Meatloaf, or, you know, it's obviously supposed to be Eddie doing, like, something with a belt or something in his mouth. Leandra, do you know what this photo is supposed to be depicting?
Yes. Yes, I do.
Woohoo! Good, because I was actually really curious.
Do you want to continue with your thing, or do you want to...
Well, we're pretty much at the end, so yeah, I'll just say, he adds, "shooting up junk," and then Krim shows now Eddie's mugshots and adds, "he was a low-down, cheap little punk," and then Scott says, "taking everyone for a," and that's the end of the minute. So, what is that photo, Leandra?
It is Eddie shooting up junk. He has the belt around the arm,
he's like...
and if you look, there's a needle in there, and okay. He's been caught doing that, so his arm is up like, "hey, don't take a picture of this. I'm doing something nefarious with my body."
I wondered if the belt was to do with shooting up junk, but I did not, first of all, did not see the needle, and also did not intuit that storyline of, like, why his arm was up, because that is not the typical shooting up junk pose, but thank you, yeah.
Yeah.
It's a great photo. Really fun. A cute little candid. So yeah, before we go too much further, I want to bitch about something that is just a personal annoyance of mine, which the painting that many people know as Whistler's Mother, or like Portrait of the Artist's Mother, is not the title, and Whistler really, really hated when people called it that. It is called Arrangement in Gray and Black, and then later they added number 1 because he did another Arrangement in Gray and Black that was almost exactly the same that Thomas Carlyle sat for. But yeah, I know many people call it that. This is something that that he wrote in his book, The Gentle Art of Making Enemies. He said, "Take the picture of my mother exhibited at the Royal Academy as an arrangement in grand black. Now that is what it is. To me, it is interesting as a picture of my mother, but what can or ought the public to care about the identity of the portrait?" So basically, Whistler did not want people to look at this painting with the context of thinking about it being his mother and, like, connecting that to the artist. He wanted it to just be, like, he wanted it to be, like, a blank slate for you, basically. So that's why it kind of bothers me when people call it, you know, Whistler's mother, but everyone calls it that. Richard O'Brien called it that in the commentary. I know I need to get over it, but I won't.
You don't have to get over it. You could die mad about it.
I think I shall. Whistler did. So why not I?
to Whistler, who died as he lived.
Mad that people kept calling his painting by the wrong name for no reason.
Yeah, we love this.
But anyway, I think it's interesting that this painting is often... I often hear it mentioned at the same time as, like, American Gothic. People connect the two, which is interesting because that is another painting that was obviously really prominently referenced in this movie.
I think that they both just feel very Americana.
Yeah, definitely. And that's why, I mean, Richard O'Brien, especially as a foreigner, or, well, I guess might not have even been him. It was probably Brian Thompson, to be honest. But he's also a foreigner, so I wonder if that's, at the time, if that's, like, what came to mind when people thought about America and American art.
I really wish that we had more pictures of the photo shoot of Meatloaf sitting for this, because...
Yeah.
This is a story that I've heard many times over the years, but I wasn't able to trace it back to anything. He sat for this because he was upset that he couldn't do drag as Dr. Scott like he did for the stage play. He was still incredibly bitter that he was only Eddie. So he was like, fine, I'm still going to be in drag. It doesn't matter if nobody notices. I'm still going to do it. And I don't know if that's true, but that is at least a thing that I've heard from multiple people over the years. So maybe.
Yeah, I have heard that too. And it does kind of, it kind of strikes me as apocryphal, but it's a really fun idea. And also I like that. And this is another reason that it would have been great if Meatloaf was also playing Scott, because it's another joke of, like, because I assume that's supposed to be, you know, Eddie's mother, and it's another joke of, like, Meatloaf is playing all his family members, you know?
I think it's supposed to be Eddie's mother, because the line is, but he never caused her nothing but shame.
Yeah, I assumed. And so, because of that, you know, it would have been even funnier if they had preserved that joke with Dr. Scott, but yeah.
Eddie's whole family was just like Muscle Man's family from the regular show.
Yeah. But yeah, I thought it was fun that they had Krim. I assume it was like Krim was imitating Dr. Scott's, like, grammar. Because I don't think he would normally say, he never caused her nothing but shame. And my theory for that would be that probably that was originally a Scott line in the show. Or I'm almost certain it was, because Krim isn't in the show, right?
No, he is.
Oh, he is. All right. Well, is that a Krim line in the Rocky Horror Show?
So, interestingly enough, yes, but it's a little bit complicated because, hypothetically, the song wasn't included in the 1973 original London cast recording because the album was recorded before Charles Atlas' song, and that's because that, among other songs, was added to the show later. So
yeah, I've got more about that I'm saving for when we're raiding. I'm very excited.
Ooh.
Yeah, a little preview.
I like how aggro Krim is saying his lines. He is like fucking pissed. I don't really understand why, but I love the energy.
Charles Gray seems to feel a deep sympathy for, I guess, Eddie's mother, which makes sense because he seems like he would hate ne'er-do-wells.
Yeah. That criminologist, definitely not a cool guy. Very anti-drugs and sex and rock and roll, in possibly not that order.
And yet he keeps titty pics in his binder, curious.
Yeah, I never thought about that until I was analyzing this minute. I always say that, like, that's the only nudity in the film, but not true. Columbia. I always say Columbia is the only nudity in the film, but no. There's a titty pic. If Joe Bob Briggs were doing his drive-in totals for this, he would count...
Three titties. Well, four.
Well, yeah, I know. I'm now thinking, I guess six? Because we see one nipple from Columbia twice.
Oh, yeah.
And then we see both of her nipples, and then we see this mystery lady's nipples.
Her whole ass honkers.
Mm-hmm.
Ass honkers?
Yeah.
Yeah. Tonight on Ass Honkers.
Is that like a...
But that's all I have.
A show like MILF Hunter from 30 Rock?
Yeah. Shout out to our friend Mike, not Leandra's fiance Mike.
Oh.
But he's a MILF hunter.
The bald one.
Yes.
Oh. Oh? I don't know this
person.
You
don't know this person.
Okay.
But if you were a MILF, you would.
If you're a MILF in the...
Carnally.
If you're a MILF in the tri-state area, or I guess around Vegas.
Yeah. Or in Amsterdam.
That's true.
Yeah.
We love this. This is good content.
It is, I know. I mean, listen, I'm out of content for the movie, so y'all can go crazy talking about it.
I was really looking for stuff to make commentary on, and I've gotten so deep that, like, I noticed Riff has, like, a red, like, cut or line or something on his chest that you can see when he leans in. I don't know if that's, like, a makeup effect or what. It's there.
It's makeup.
Okay.
Yeah, he's got blood on his chest and on his vest as well.
Okay. Oh, I guess I wonder if that's implying that he has dismembered Eddie for serving.
Delicious.
Spoilers.
Talk about things that make me angry like it's a swear.
Spoilers, sweetie.
Spoilers or people getting mad about spoilers?
Specifically saying spoilers in that way, and if you're a Whovian, you damn well know what you've done.
Oh, well, I'm not, so I'm gonna go get laid. But not with Brad, because he is a Whovian.
David Tennant's a wonderful actor.
Yes.
He is a wonderful actor. No arguments here.
Man, if David Tennant were in this...
I was just thinking the same thing. I actually think he could do a really good Frank, I believe.
I think so.
He also could be fun as, like, Brad.
Oh, I could see that.
Riff. Actually, he could do Riff, I think.
An incredibly murderable Eddie. Whoa, Kelly. Kelly.
No, calm I know. No, I can't. I'm already stripping down.
Like you're wearing clothes. That's just so unfair to say. I do have other notes.
Okay, let's hear them.
Okay. So, yet again, Peter Henwood is greased up in a sexy, sexy way, but if you're at a dining room table with that lighting, it just makes you look sweaty and gross. So it is less and less likely that anybody could find him attractive. I love the thought of Brad just staring at this greasy, filthy man and going, why did you get it? How did you get it? I feel like I have more to offer.
Yeah, I mean,
so that's why he's upset.
Realistically, Rocky has fucked around twice at this point, so I think he, and I guess run around in the dirt and rain too, so being a sweaty, dirty Frankenstein man is probably more accurate for the vibe.
I think he looks great in this scene, though. I don't know what you're talking about, Leandra.
I am very gay, so...
Yeah. Oscar knows what I'm talking about.
He doesn't like men with too many muscles.
Just one big one, yeah. And it's inside of him. Oscar saying, bottom? I'm not a bottom to nobody.
Oscar pretending like someone called him a bottom so that he could argue with them. That was one of my favorite Oscar moments.
That was really a... He might have cribbed that from you, like, at your parties when you're like, we should play Kings. Who said that?
I do love playing Kings. We should play Kings instead of talking about this movie anymore.
My next note about this movie.
Fine.
I wonder why Dr. Scott keeps moving his head to face other people. Specifically in this, it's very clear that the direction he got was make sure that you're including as many people as possible in your storytelling. So on every single line, he intentionally moves his head to face somebody else. So it's facing Frank for trouble, facing Brad and Janet for mother's side, then back to Rocky, then back to Frank, back to Rocky. It's very intentional and incredibly unpleasant to watch once you have eyes on it. There's nothing organic about it.
I like his jowls moving while he's singing. He really gets that, like, I don't know. He gets his whole face shaking.
Yeah, Lyndon Johnson style.
I do like that Dr. Scott has this wonderful moment where he's serving a lot of face, but at least at our show, we kind of completely disregard it.
As we kind of went into it, we're herding cats a little bit at this point in the show, so it's kind of a less serious moment. Although we did take it pretty seriously at the Halloween show. That was a cool thing that we did with the table.
Yeah, and on lots of casts, they do take it seriously and get the audience enjoying the time that we have together in different ways. Particularly if you don't have an underwear run, you have a lot of opportunity during this to do the hand jive from Grease.
Yeah. I was about to be like, show us, Leandra, but...
I'm doing it right now.
Oh, I just did a backflip. I just did a backflip. You guys don't know.
Yeah, my titties are out.
I mean... We know that. Yeah.
But yeah, you have a lot more opportunity to do something interesting with this dinner scene if you don't have an underwear run. If you have an underwear run at this point, you're pretty much, that's what you're doing right now. And the audience is not watching you anymore. So,
although I've been to shows where they have an underwear run, but they don't warn anybody about it, and it's only the regulars that do it, we don't have enough regulars to have that be a thing, but it is kind of wild that all of a sudden, for no reason that people would know, people would just get up naked and go chasing after somebody. I feel like as a virgin, that would be an intensely strange thing to understand.
And fun.
Yeah. Yeah, if you just have, like, one regular in the audience, that takes on, like, a more sinister quality.
Running at Frank like a badass.
Yeah.
But those are all my notes. All
right. Should we move on to callbacks?
I think we shall.
Brad, You know any callbacks for this minute?
I was really racking my brain, and I think there's that one part where you go, oi, 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 and that's it. And that's, I'm trying to remember the exact line, and I'm blanking on the lyrics.
It is, of course, after he says, he was a low-down, cheap little punk. Yeah, everyone should chant, oi, oi, oi. For me, something that happens throughout this song that has intensely irritated me since I was a kid is after every like line that Scott says for no reason other than, I guess, to have something to say, like he says, from the day he was born, not the night, but the day. He was trouble, not monopoly, but trouble. He was the thorn, not the rose, but the thorn in his mother's side, not the front, but the side. She tried in vain, not the artery, but the vein. And they do it later too. I just have never liked it, but it's, I do appreciate that there's not a whole lot to go off here. So people are doing what they have to. And then after he says, but he never caused her nothing but shame, it's typical to chant, shame, shame, shame. And then the only other one I have is just, right before the music picks up, just pick up the pace. That's it. When you say it with the beat of the song, it sounds nice, but.
So I've got a couple more. When I first started doing Rocky, I was a Transylvanian often, and on this cast, it was the Transylvanian's responsibility to get people hyped up to do the hand jive. So there were little hand movements for not the night, but the day, with a pop-o-matic bubble was what we said instead of not monopoly, but trouble. And then every rose has its thorn instead of not the rose, but the thorn. And then instead of not the back, but the side, a lot of people would say, and I don't understand why, they would just start screaming, Britney Spears must die. And then somebody else would go, leave Britney alone. And I get that part of it. Because, like the leave Britney alone.
Chris Crocker. Yeah.
That's fine. But I don't know why Britney had to be involved in this to begin with. Yeah.
If I had to guess, I would say it's probably similar to the Madonna thing in that she was popular at the time and people were just saying her name for no particular reason.
That's fair.
That's my guess. I genuinely have no idea, though. I've never even heard that.
It's because anytime I consider saying it, I go, wow, people don't need to know how old I am.
It's funny because it has looped back around, but that Britney Spears is pretty relevant again. But you don't wanna malign her in public.
No. So. Although it was a choice for her to release the female version of The Man Inside Me by Tobias Funke as her.
I cannot believe she named it that. Because if any Arrested Development fans in the audience must have been as shocked as I was when Britney Spears, what I think it's literally called The Woman Inside, or it's like The Woman in Me or something, right? Insane.
I have a couple more callbacks.
Okay.
A lot of these are kind of going in rhythm with the lyrics. Or at least the music. So it goes, shabop, shabop, Scott. All he wanted was Dr. Scott's cock. It was rock and roll porn. And then you see, hi, Mom. It's the porn mag. And then Krem flips the page and you go, hi, sis. And Dr. Scott goes, und a motorbike. And you go, ooh, woo. And then he shoot it up junk. You go, gimme junk, gimme junk, or gimme drugs, if you think that people don't know that junk is heroin. And then when you see when you see Eddie and you see that he's got a prisoner number, it's 274306, that you scream 274306, and then that goes into the oi oi oi.
Oh, fun.
Is that number a reference to anything, or is that just...
It appears to be random digits. If somebody knows something that I don't about it, you should leave us a 5-star review and tell us.
It is Leandra's ATM pin.
Yes, all 4 digits, but you're going to have to guess which ones.
It's Kelly's body count.
Yeah. That's a low number. Those are rookie numbers.
It's a low estimate.
This isn't really slut shaming. This is like...
Yeah, no, I'm proud of this.
Yeah.
I want them to see.
But that's all I got.
All right. Well.
So now... You don't have to go home, but you can't stay here. So get the fuck out.
Get the fuck out. To the late night double feature picture show.